You filed a flight plan to Mountain Rescue. If we don't report in, they'll come looking for us.
Now, that's how it's supposed to work, except I put in a flight plan for Borum Caverns, and this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno?
We're in the wrong cave.
Where are we?
It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. No one's ever been down here before.
Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to stay alive without your mommy and daddy or die with them? That's a tough question, huh?
It was moving. It was alive. It knows we're here. We just have to go. We have
we
to
can't
go.
Do that.
You didn't see it. I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they'd kill us.
We're being quarantined here. We are being kept here to die.
While you were looking for me, I was looking for you. Well, I got you now.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Didn't walk very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs.
And I'm gonna do the same to you.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire, US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice. That's from They Live.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, and Abe, are you there?
Hey. I'm right here, guys.
Abe's from Massachusetts. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. And Mike, who's are you available to speak? Or are you?
I'm available to speak. Yes.
Excellent. So Mike,
I knew I was coming up somewhere in the queue.
Yes. Yeah, so actually, I screwed up when I started talking about They Live, and then I got flustered.
It's my fault. I got excited.
Yeah, and I called out the wrong name next because I go and basically.
That's probably calling out the wrong name, but he's all excited.
Exactly. I guess. It works for me. Let's see here. Mike, you're from the state of New York.
Yes, last time I checked.
Very good. Even though you're like a stone throws from both Pennsylvania and New Jersey because they're on the other side of the river.
Yes.
Yes. Which is kind of cool, actually. That is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's neat, but what it does is, and not to get too into local politics, is it keeps any businesses from moving into this town because Pennsylvania has all the low tax rates.
There you go.
So we're eternally screwed.
Well, everybody just shops and works in the Pennsylvania side.
Yeah, but now the taxes come back to this town.
Oh, yeah, I see your point. Good point. Therefore, your property taxes go up because you don't have businesses to pay for the property taxes.
Yeah, we just got our house assessed, and I think we might be underwater. So,
devastating.
It's been 10 years. I thought we had maybe recovered enough.
But, alas, you found otherwise.
Yeah, well, that's okay, as long as I don't hear sharks.
Now, let's see. First off, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's Askancity. You can find it on Stitcher and the iTunes Store.
Very good. And, Mike, you do a genre blog?
Yes, that's Unnatural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com.
Very good. And, Abe, you do a genre blog.
Yep, it's called The Realer Movie Reviewer. Easiest way to find it is going to the Dark Discussions main page and looking on the right-hand side. You will also find links to the aforementioned sites as well and a few other goodies as well.
Yep, that's right, www.darkdiscussions.com. And we can be found on Stitcher and iTunes. We do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast. Search for that. And we have a Twitter account, Dark Discussion One and RSS feed and various things like that. And all those things are at the bottom of every page of darkdiscussions.com. And as Abe said, links to Mike, Eric, and Abe's pages and podcasts are on the right side of the front page of darkdiscussions.com. And Eric, me, you, and Mike just wrapped up another podcast that we do.
That's right. That's our Game of Thrones podcast called You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. We just wrapped up season 5, and we'll be coming back next year for season 6.
That's right. So folks who want to check that out, you can find us on the Dark Discussions feed, but it may be easier if you subscribe on iTunes to You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast, and it is also on Stitcher. And the home site for that podcast is also darkdiscussions.com. There's a big link for the Jon Snow podcast on the front page of www.darkdiscussions.com. First off, Mike, you are heading somewhere next week. What is this all about?
Explain. Yeah, me and my balls are going down to Virginia to the Scares at Care weekend. And oh, I'm sorry, Eric, were you laughing? I'm sorry, I got some promotional stress balls to give away at the convention that say Dark Discussions podcast on them. Eric apparently went to an immature place with that.
I know, that's a shocker, me going to an immature place.
That's right, and those stress balls, the graphic on the stress ball or the artwork is by one of our listeners, Travis Heckel. And Travis Heckel is an artist. You can find him on Facebook and does fantastic work. People should check him out and find him on Facebook. And by the way, it is 1 year, unfortunately, 1 year anniversary of the passing of his dog Belle, who a year ago, and it's been in the news a lot of folks have been doing this, a bucket list for dogs right before they pass away. And Travis did that for Belle. He went to Belle's favorite park. And they went to all the items and things that they used to do that she used to love. And
those things make me cry.
Oh, it is most certainly. Yeah, it is. It is sad, but it's a bitter sadness. I mean, a happy sadness because Belle, for example,
there's a bit of sweetness to it.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for because Belle was able to do all the great things that she liked. So, but he does have a new dog I discovered. I did not know this, named Mia, and a good looking dog, half boxer. And I forget what the other half is, but good looking dog. So thanks to Travis Heckel for the artwork for those balls. And Mike, you're bringing them all down to Scares at Care, right?
Well, I'm giving you a couple. I'm sending one to Eric. I'm sending one to Abe. And the other 85 or so are coming down with me, along with some flyers just to help drum up some promotion for the podcast. And they've got their last guest they added might interest you, Phil, is Kim Coates, who played Tig on Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, no kidding, huh? Yeah, the Canadian actor. Yep. Nice, nice.
Just straight to the nationality with you, Phil. It's always...
Well, yeah. So that's cool. Yeah, I know he's on or about to star in a new television show, but he has a movie out right now about vampires or something.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going to be kind of neat to talk to him, see him.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is he in the... the new show by Kurt Sutter, which is the Bastard Executioner?
I don't know.
Which is like a medieval piece.
Oh, really? And when's that supposed to come out?
I'm started seeing ads for it. I think they started promoing it for for Comic-Con. So I'm guessing it's going to hit soon.
Do you know what station?
Probably FX.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, he has a good working relationship with FX. And we'll get a couple of the squeeze balls to Travis as well, since it is his artwork, so he should definitely get a few of them. Any further information about the conference or convention you wanted to mention?
Well, no, just if anybody's there, it's going to be hard to miss me, I think. Just look for the fat guy with the hat, and I'd love to meet you, love to say hello. I'd love to know somebody out there is listening, because I know not even my mom listens.
That's all right. And
actually, I don't think she even knows what a podcast is. I've tried explaining it a few times, but
right. Yeah.
So, what station do you turn it to? No, it's not. It's not actually on. It's like a radio anyway.
Very well. But either way, you'll have to get back to us and let us know all the stuff that you saw there and the people you talked to and things like that. Are you doing any interviews, you think, or are you just going to go?
I'm going to see what I can do, see what I can round up, and then because I never ended up putting together the interviews from last year, I'll probably just put them all together in one package. Bless you.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Right. Well, all right. That's cool. And when you get down there, there's one author that's going to be there called David Bernstein. And you should talk to him. I know him pretty well. He's a good guy. So I just mention my name to him, and he'll know who I'm talking about. And he may know Christy, too, because he was at Anthocon, which is the Portsmouth, New Hampshire writer and horror convention that occurred a month and a half ago. MJ Preston and Christy Peterson Schoonover went to. Now, let's see. Since I was talking to you, Mike, any items, news, or films or books you wanted to mention to folks?
Well, last night I watched, because it was available for streaming for free, the first episode of CBS's The Zoo.
I'm not familiar.
Which is a miniseries of nature gone amok.
Oh, yeah.
The animals.
Yeah, I saw an ad for that. It looked pretty cool.
Yeah, and it is bad in pretty much all the best ways. So I'm definitely going to have to try to catch the rest of the episodes as they come out, or at least as long as I can stand it. But the first one, I had some fun with. It was not good by any stretch of the imagination, but it was kind of cheesy fun, at least for those who like animal attacks movies.
Is it like an apocalypse too, like the end of the world, or is it?
We haven't gotten there yet, but. Based on the pretentious dialogue that you hear and the narration at the start, I'm pretty sure it's going apocalyptic.
Very well. And is there any huge stars, or is it just mostly TV folks or newer TV folks?
I think it was just TV folks. There were people I recognized, but the names aren't jumping out at me.
Okay, very good. So, all right, that's The Zoo. Anything else?
I did watch a film called Jin, which was on Netflix.
Oh, J-I-N or D-G?
J-I-N-N, right. It's okay. It's all definitely right. Low budget. It's got some interesting visuals. In the end, it's sort of the Chosen One fights off the apocalypse story, so it's not all that original there, but if you like the idea of seeing different creatures, then it might be worth a shot. It's pretty short. It's only 90 minutes. I'm not sorry I watched it. I would probably never have a need to watch it again. But I wouldn't say it's a great film. It was passable. Maybe with a better budget and more time, it would have been better. But I don't know. You could give it a shot. I thought there was something else I'd watched, but it's slipping my mind right now. So I'll pass the baton.
All right. Yeah, I'll just go. I only saw a couple of things. I saw episode 4 of The True Detective.
Is that still worth watching?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's definitely not as good as last season. But then again, the last season, first of all, last season was better, at least the first three quarters. But also last season I watched binging. So it was, much better to do it that way. But yeah, it's a good show. It's on my agenda to watch every week, but it's not necessarily like Game of Thrones where I was all excited to see it. Mm-hmm. So I saw that. And then I rewatched the best horror film in the past 10 years, It Follows. I got the Blu-ray this week, and it was
you're baiting me, sir. You're baiting me.
It's still the best film in the past 10 years for horror, and great
liar.
Great film, and high recommend for everybody to go rent it or buy it or any way you want. It's a great film. At least you have to see it. And I did see one other film, Eric, and you saw it too. And I may actually add it to the top 10 best horror films of the year, and it was called Creep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a found footage documentary-type horror film. Stars the same actor that starred in The Lazarus Effect and in Safety Not Guaranteed. I forget the guy's name. Mike, you may know his name. But
I Yeah, but, no, I don't.
Are you talking about the guy who is the creep?
Yeah, exactly.
I actually know him from the television series The League.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I forget his name. He's a screenwriter, too.
Mark Duplass.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, yeah. And he was really good in this film. I mean, he was awesome. High recommend. Very creepy. And, like, makes you feel, like, dirty. It's like, ew. And I think I liked it a lot more than you because, Eric, you mentioned the last episode that you saw it and you thought it was pretty good. But I don't think you would say it was a top 10, or would you?
Well, right now I would because it's July. Yeah. I did enjoy the movie. I think you're right. I think you liked it more than I did, but I still liked it.
Right, yep. Yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out. I couldn't find it on Netflix, so I
really?
had to rent it.
Huh. It's there.
Yeah, kind of close, but I heard it's on Netflix now. Yeah, so everybody should check that out. Eric, what about yourself?
Let's see. I think I talked about this on Facebook, but not actually on the podcast. Did I mention the Terminator movie last time?
Yeah, you just mentioned that you were going to see it with your new glasses to see if 3D would work.
Yeah, I saw it with my contacts to see if 3D was a little bit more effective. And the verdict is that, yes, it's a little bit more effective, but I still don't think it's worth the increased ticket price. So I did that, and that movie was okay. It was weird, because to me it felt like a Terminator knockoff, which was really strange since Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually in it. So it was okay. I wouldn't rush out to the theater to see it. You can rent that one.
In some ways, it's almost like a big budget fan fiction.
Yeah, kind of.
It does.
That's kind of what it felt like. Yeah. That's actually a very good description, Mike.
Well, because it doesn't do anything really original on its own. It just echoes a lot of what came before.
Right.
So.
I also saw, I've seen a bunch of stuff. I watched a couple episodes of a television series called Salem, on Netflix, which is, I'm willing to see where it goes. It's well made. It's about, you know, Salem during the witch trials and everything, only it's a fictional plot line where there actually are witches who are like controlling the course of events. So it's kind of interesting. I finished the Stephen King book I was reading, Finders Keepers. I can mildly recommend it. I did not enjoy it as much as Mr. Mercedes, even though it's got some of the same characters in it. So it was not a great follow-up to that book, but it was okay. And last weekend I watched It Follows with Dan because I wanted to see his reaction to the movie.
It's the best horror film in the last 10 years.
Well, you know, not even the last 10 years, I told him that a lot of people are saying it's the best horror movie of this year, and he said, really? so, he liked it, but he didn't think it was all that.
Well, what is the competition?
Well, and that's where we're at in July, really. So, I watched that again. Phil, I don't think it's a bad movie. It's a good movie. Your statements about it are just ridiculous. That's all.
Oh, come on. It's a great film.
but it's not the best horror movie in the last 10 years. That's just a stupid thing to say.
A lot of people say it, though. A lot of people say
no,
it.
You are the only person I've heard say that.
It says it right on the front cover of the jacket for the film.
Oh, well, it says it on a jacket. It must be true.
It says it right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if a critic said it, then it must be true. Phil, what are we going to do with you?
Is it attributed to you, Phil, by any chance?
is it Phil's quote on the jacket?
It could be attributed to Jason Lloyd of Horrorphilia, who says the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. Now, was The Descent within the last 10 years?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Then I'm really going to – that would be my first one to go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's close. That's close. I'll give you that. But
not even. All right. Moving on. I'm done.
Okay. Very well.
Oh, my God. The print on this is so tiny. I can't make out the name. It's like they're giving someone credit but not giving them credit.
Oh, you got the disc in front of you.
Oh, wait. There's one more thing I wanted to talk about. Mike posted it on the Dark Discussions page. I actually pasted it on the Ascansity page separately, which is that they came out with a trailer for Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Really?
The Starz series coming out this fall, and it actually looks like a whole lot of fun. I was very happy to see the trailer because I had concerns. My concerns have been allayed.
I think whatever you had hoped, for me anyway, whatever I could have hoped in my best case scenario, the trailer went past that.
Yeah, it looks good.
Now, that doesn't mean it'll hold up, but I mean, when you start out with the homage to the quick flurry of, you know, the belt buckling and the tightening of the leather straps, and turns out he's just putting on a girdle.
Yes, it was pretty awesome.
And I like that he's still a stock boy.
Right, 30 years later.
Because you see, he's wearing the S-Smart smock, and I expected to see, like a, you know, sales manager or something. Or sales.
Right.
Nope, still stock boy.
Well, I love that he has it tear away so he can reveal his blue shirt and brown pants underneath. So anyway, if you're a fan of the Evil Dead, this looks like is just the guys that originally made those movies catering to their fans. So you might want to check that out on Starz this fall.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm watching the trailer right now.
Very good. Very good. All right. And let's see. Abe, what about yourself?
Not a whole lot. I did get to see the season premiere of season two for The Strain.
Damn, you beat me to it. I was hoping you wouldn't say anything, and then I go, now the best part for Eric.
And Eric walks away.
And Eric walks away for 20 minutes while you guys jack off over that.
Okay. I haven't seen it yet. And Mike, have you seen it yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. All right. So, hey, what did you think?
It was a decent little start to a season. I wasn't exactly, like, on the edge of my seat, but it does set up some things that should be, could potentially be quite, twisty? That's not the word. It's not the right word for it. I can't really just talk about it without spoiling it, but, it looks like all I can say is that the vampires have a few little tricks up their sleeves for our heroes, but also the humans themselves have a few surprises for our bloodsuckers in return. It should be promising if considering that despite each season pertaining to the book, they are kind of going their own directions to some extent. So it could leave some surprises open.
All right. And what about you, Mike? What did you think of it?
I thought it was fine. I thought it was better than the typical episode from the first season, but I wasn't as big on the first season as you were, Phil. I'm happy to hear that they're going in different directions than the book did, because I know a lot of people didn't like the way that ended up. So I'm hoping it stays strong. I do want to recommend, I put it up on the Facebook page. There was a promotional video shot for it, featuring the, was it Einhorst, the Nazi vampire?
Yep.
Which is really very much in the tone of, What We Do in the Shadows, in which he puts up his vampire lair for Airbnb. So, it was just an entertaining little 3 or 4 minute clip.
It was funny. It was definitely funny. Yeah, and hey, what else?
No, that's it for me. Aside from today's subjects.
Very well, very well. All right. So I guess that's pretty much it. Is anybody else that want to news or anything besides me saying once more that It Follows is the best horror film in the past 10 years? Anyone?
No. Well, I mean, you got a lot of stuff coming out with Comic-Con. You have The Outcast, which is I think coming out next year for Starz, which is an Exorcist-themed TV series. They had the Fear the Walking Dead, which comes out at the end of August.
I'm just about zombied out.
Yeah, I can't get there. That's like saying you're sharked out.
Fair enough.
There's no such thing. So there is a lot of new stuff coming out. It just, we'll see what hits and what doesn't. Because somehow it's like, I don't know why tonight's movie ended up in the theaters.
All right.
So we have Mike's opinion.
Well, no, I don't know how that – I don't know why – I really don't know watching it why that was in theaters and, you know, a lot of other films that we've seen didn't make it into theaters.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I see what
you're saying. One thing, AMC, which always does that – speaking of The Walking Dead, which always does like the great – was it Fear Fest or Fright Fest, whatever they do at the on Halloween. They've started their own online streaming horror service called Shudder, S-H-U-D-D-E-R. It's not free. It's going to be, I think, $50 a year to subscribe, but you get, like, if you want to sign up early to Shudder.com, you get, like, 2 weeks free to sample the service. And they have a lot of classic horror films to watch, so you can catch them without having to worry about commercial interruptions or paying out for a Blu-ray or DVD on a film you haven't necessarily seen. So,
Is it VOD or is
it's
it?
It's VOD. So okay. It's sort of like horror, it's sort of like Netflix horror.
Okay, yeah, but you do get it straight through a HTML website rather than through an icon on like a iPad or something.
They do have apps for it, so I know they have. So they have it for Android and iOS. You know whether they'll end up like on the for smart TVs and Blu-ray players and game consoles. I'm sure that would be coming down the line. It's not. They haven't done the full fledged launch yet. But they do have, like I said, the sort of the preview trial running. And so, like, I'm just looking here on the first page. They have I Saw the Devil, John Dies at the End, Carnival of Souls, City of the Living Dead. Yeah, so these are just a sample. And they have the collection, so you can sort through. Like, they have Alien Intruders, Eco Horror, Gross Anatomy, Identity Crisis, Into the Wild, Haunted Habitations, Diabolical Documentaries, Smart Slashers, so and Weird Science and lots of other things, Zombie Jamboree. So depending on what your interest in horror is, they've got at least something for you. And I am not being paid to endorse this. I'm just saying give it a shot. It's a new thing, and if it's a success, I think we would all benefit.
All right. Yeah, I guess that's it. Well, I guess we can get into our topic for tonight. And so, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we're going to be talking about the movie currently in theaters called The Gallows.
Nothing! All right, all right, all right.
Here we go.
Can I get some stealth, please?
Yeah, this place is super creepy tonight.
All right, here's the stage. Let's do what we came here for.
For you, sir.
Who the hell would be in here right now? Hello?
Charlie Grimm will die after a prop malfunction during the high school's presentation of The Gallows.
What's going on?
There's no tape in here.
Someone died in the school?
Charlie.
What is happening? It's Charlie.
He's real.
I'm getting us out of here.
Hey, Charlie!
Don't say his name.
Don't say his name. Charlie.
You shouldn't say that name.
Someone will come.
Yeah, that's right. Bloom Productions, same folks that produce pretty much every other horror film that goes to the theaters. Basically, it's the same guys that did Paranormal Activity and Insidious and all those. That's the production company. The film is directed by a couple of blokes named Travis Clough and Chris Loafing.
I'm sorry, did you say blokes?
I did.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. The people on the other side of the pond would appreciate that. Also written by these same folks. Stars Reese Mishler, who's a guy. Pfeiffer Brown, who's a girl. Ryan Shoes and Cassidy Gifford. No one famous, though Cassidy Gifford is probably... her father's very well known to myself and Eric, being the news reporter and tight. I think he was a tight end, wasn't he? In the NFL, Frank Gifford.
I don't know what position he played off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither, to be honest. But Frank Gifford, the Hall of Fame NFL player for American football, his daughter Cassidy Gifford is one of the four stars of the film. Cassidy Gifford's mother is probably most well known, probably more well known than her husband, to be honest. And that's Kathy Lee Gifford. So, yes. So that's the only person of note, to my knowledge. The film has a budget of only $100,000 to make this film, so that's interesting. And for a film that made $100,000, it did make $14.5 million on opening weekend worldwide. So,
really? Wow.
Yes. So okay. It has made all its money back and a hell of a lot more. So,
wow. It did that much?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It done did good.
It sure did. It does fall in the footsteps of most horror films that are released at theaters nowadays, which is the found footage format. So I guess we can go around the board and discuss what we thought of the film. Mike, since you already kind of alluded to your opinions or how it got in the theaters, well, why don't you go ahead? Why don't you let folks know your opinion?
Well, I was really short on sleep when I went to see this, and I was... deathly afraid that I was going to fall asleep during the film, knowing it was found footage and how long it takes found footage to get to its point. And then about halfway through the film, I was deathly afraid that I wasn't going to fall asleep while watching the movie. I'm not a fan. I ended up liking it more by the end than I did at the beginning, but I still wouldn't say I like it or really could give it much of a recommend. I will say that the teenage girl who sold me my tickets really liked the movie and thought it was really scary. It's a good jump movie. So,
okay.
And just to get it out there, my wife did not like it and might have liked it even less than I did.
Mike, what time frame did you go to the theater and what type of folks were in the audience?
Saw it yesterday, 4:50 showing. Yesterday, by the way, for those not knowing, would have been a Wednesday. And there were like four or five other people in the audience. I didn't get a good look at them, though.
Okay, very well. I saw it Monday night. Monday night, so it was a small audience as well. Most of the people in the audience were... There was only like 10 to 12 people there, including myself, and everybody there was either 20, young 20s, and they were mostly couples or a group of girls. So it was definitely marketed to the early 20 audience, and sure enough, that's what appeared to be there. And all the trailers in front of the film were all teenage girls or teenage boy, college type kid preview films. My opinion of the film, I actually like the first part better than the second part, so I'm the opposite with you, Mike. I didn't hate it as much as I thought I would, because I was expecting complete crap, which some people may, you know, on this podcast may actually say it still is. But since I was expecting it to be horrible, when I finally watched it, I didn't find it as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was just a standard film. You know, if you're going through Netflix and you say, oh, this looks interesting, and put it in and watch it, you know, hour and a half. That it's that type of film. I have to agree with you, Mike, that it definitely wouldn't be scary for folks like me or you who have watched numerous horror films, especially the good, real, you know, the classic ones. But I could see someone like that teenage girl or college girl that gave you the ticket would say, oh my God, it was a scary film. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought of the film. Eric, what about you?
Well, I did not go into this with very high expectations. And I think I agree with you, Phil, because I would give it a Netflix level recommendation. I wouldn't rush out to the theater to see it. I did not think it was a great movie. I didn't even necessarily think it was a good movie, but I do give it points for trying to do something a little bit different towards the end. Because I frankly didn't – I had theories, but I didn't put together what they were going for in the end, which was kind of cool. But still, to give you the idea of the level of this film, the four main principal characters in the film all have the same first name that they have in real life. So that's the level of actor we're talking about here.
I've noticed a few found footage type films have done that recently as well for some reason. They use the first names of the people, even though their last names are different. So it's just curious. I think even Paranormal Activity did that, to be honest, which is kind of interesting.
So did Aliens.
Aliens. What's Aliens?
What's Aliens? Aliens?
Well, I don't understand. That's
the
not
sequel
a found
to
footage.
Alien?
That's not a found footage film.
No, but all the characters in Aliens, with the exception of, I think, Hicks and the Paul Reiser character, their first names were all the names of the actors.
Oh, and Hudson probably too, right?
No, Hudson had his first name.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't even know they even used any first names in that film. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's because they used the last names for the most part, so you would have had to see, like, the technical readouts or the dog tags. Anyway.
All right, and what about you, Abe?
I really went into this movie with no expectations at all, like no hope at all, and I walked out with no hope at all from this movie.
So it met your expectations.
In a strange way, it did, actually. I really did not care for this movie. I wouldn't say it was the most painful thing I've ever had to sit through, but it did have some level of annoyance, especially in the first part of it. I really did not like the characters at all. Especially Ryan, who I was so pissed off we were sucked with for half the film. I didn't find any point of the film actually scary. And most of the time, there wasn't any real risks taken with the narrative. I felt this played pretty much straight, and I thought that the twist was pretty asinine. And an absolute ass pull, especially with the tacked on little extra scare ending. I'd like to put that in big quotes. I was struggling not to fall asleep at certain points. So the only thing that was keeping me conscious was the loud banging noises they kept doing throughout the fucking film.
I don't think Abe liked this.
If people want to see this, I think I would agree with you guys, you know, that maybe Netflix is probably the best way to go, but it's definitely not a film to pay money for, to go pay full price ticket for. I was kind of lucky because I actually had earned a free ticket. So that kind of absorbed some of the disgust I was feeling walking out.
Disgust.
Damn.
You know, this was just...
How do you really feel, Abe?
Let me tell you how I really feel. But I think it's not so much an offensive kind of bad. It's kind of like what the Poltergeist remake. It's mostly, in my opinion, forgettable. I don't think I'm going to remember this film after some time. It didn't do anything that was that impactful.
I can only hope.
If there is a God.
All right. Any further thoughts, Abe, or that was pretty much it?
Well, no, I'm almost said.
Okay. I do disagree on one thing you said, Abe, and that is I thought Ryan was probably the best character because he was funny.
I knew it. He is a dick. He's a massive asshole, and it made it hard to sit through the first 60 minutes of the film.
He was the best. The best part of the film.
He was an obnoxious shit.
All right.
He was such a stereotype, too. He was absolutely fucking
awesome. I enjoyed him because he was funny.
Give me one, other than being funny, give me one redeeming feature of him as a human being.
He thought Pfeiffer was an ass.
He thought she was a nerd. That's why he didn't like her.
Yeah.
He didn't know she was. I won't get into spoilers.
I'm beginning to believe that Mike must have been picked on as a young person or something. Because anytime there's someone that.
A jock asshole?
Exactly. Mike always gets upset.
Well, that's because jock assholes are assholes.
Assholes, yes.
Asshole being the operative word.
Especially badly written assholes.
And to saddle him as your point of view character for the first hour of the film makes it hard to build any sympathy for any of the other characters, number one. And I hated his girlfriend from the first word she uttered out of her mouth.
Oh, fuck her, too.
I'm not saying the characters are likable characters, because personally I thought Pfeiffer was the worst character with her c'est la vie and all that bullshit. She was horrible, and I was hoping she would die first. But
I thought she was funny.
All in all... no, those are the type of people that I couldn't stand in high school was her.
Because you were Ryan.
I was not Ryan. I hated pretentious pricks like that Pfeiffer chick.
No, he just should, you know, you just wanted people lighten up and hit him in the face with a football.
Actually, he let the kid know that he was throwing the football, and the kid was just a pretentious prick.
So, the kid was had a box in his arms. He couldn't do anything.
That's like bullshit. That kid was a loser and he deserved it.
Ryan was a
cunt stuffer. Oh my God.
The hell with them all. All right.
Ryan, so anyway. Jock asshole, Ryan. Phil.
All right. So, actually, personally, Eric, I can honestly say everybody in high school is a fucking asshole. But
well,
that's
okay. You have a point there.
Yes. Thank you. So these characters here. I would say all four of them are probably unlikable assholes. The closest to being normal was probably Reese.
Well, Reese was just kind of a blank slate if you think about it.
Yeah.
He didn't really have much character to him.
Right. That's true. And he just followed along.
As you said, for the first half of the film, we're stuck with Cumsucker and his blonde bitch of a girlfriend.
I think Abe was picked on in high school as well, I think.
It's high school. Everybody gets picked on in high school.
Well, that's true, but...
Because everybody in high school is an asshole.
Exactly.
Well, right. The thing is, you do hope to grow out of it eventually.
High school. Middle school's worse than high school.
Oh, no, we're going back into trauma memories.
Yes, I guess so. All right, so, Eric, why don't you let folks know what's this... thing. First of all, Fife was an ass to actually have a 20th anniversary of a play where someone dies.
Here's the thing. All right. For those of you that listened to our Jurassic World episode, that was a movie that I liked, but still my brain grabbed onto things and wouldn't let go, and I can't not notice them. So I had large issues throughout the entire movie with its basic premise, which is that this high school put on a play called The Gallows, and during the production of this play, there was a prop malfunction, and one of their student's actors actually ended up hanging on stage. And the premise of this movie is that for the 20-year anniversary of that event, they're putting that play on again at the high school. The fact that any high school would ever let that happen, no, that's just never going to happen.
Yeah, I know. How the hell
ever, 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 ever.
Also, what confused me too was was it actually fully functional gallows? Or did the floor just give out under
it? Apparently it was.
Why would you make something like that?
Right. There are three issues I have with the film to start with, and in terms of just setting up the premise. And I don't know how much of it is that I'm a high school teacher, and how much of it is, you know, just that it was stupid. And one of them is exactly what you said. No school would ever put on a play. I don't care if it was fucking Peter Pan. Right?
Right.
No school would ever put on a play in which someone in that school had died within living memory.
Ever.
No, especially when you have this was made out to be some small town, right? Like out in Nebraska somewhere.
Uh-huh. That's right.
So places like that, you know, have a memory. Yes. Those stories become legends, you know, and that kid who died will be hanging over everybody's head for eternity. That will always be the legend that people grow up with.
Especially,
and that's why I will say I could buy, like, when they said, "Oh, we don't say Charlie's name behind stage." That's the sort of stupid shit that you would get in a small town school like that. Number one. Number two, the entire film hinges on the fact that there's a door into the school that can't be locked. Ever. Ever.
Yes,
and the school is fine with this. It's just this open door. In a post-Columbine world, and that was, you know,
Mike, 15
years ago.
Mike, see, you're going way too far, because they wouldn't allow it, not even because of worrying about guns, but vandals. I mean, right, if I was a punk high school kid,
exactly.
Let's go in there and bomb the place.
You would get computers stolen.
Baseball bats to the.
No, I would understand if it was, oh, it broke. Nobody realized it wasn't locking.
People would take shits right on the desk.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. One school I taught in, a kid got pissed at the music teacher and took a dump in the piano.
And that's what they would do if a door like that was open.
How do you even do that?
You open up the lid.
Yeah, imagine he had a balance up there. That's I give them props. That's a task.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, it's. I said every one thing. If they said, "Oh, nobody realized the door couldn't be locked," but Pfeiffer. Oh yeah, everybody knows that. Everybody. So the entire cast knows that this door can't be locked. Really? And it's, oh my god, that was just absolutely insane. And the other thing is that there's this reveal that Reese's dad was the guy who dropped out at the last minute and therefore Charlie got killed instead of Reese's dad getting killed.
Well, right, I actually didn't have a problem with that. I thought that was kind of neat.
But he would be forever known as the guy who got Charlie killed.
Right, spoiler alert going forward. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
All right.
But that's something that everybody would know. He's the one who got Charlie killed.
Yeah, that's what bothered me a lot, actually. And also not to mention the fact that it was actually a picture of him and the rest of the cast in the school hallway.
I have to disagree on this one, though. I don't think that would be the case, because he may have had to drop out of the play because he was ill or whatever, but I don't think people are going to remember, oh, it's his fault. I mean, if you're sick, you're sick. Someone else comes in, takes your job.
No, but he would be part of the lore. That would be it. And certainly, people, when you're his son, you would know it was your father who did it.
Yeah, all right. I see your point. It's possible. It's a little stretch, but it's possible. Okay.
Now, anyway.
All right.
So, so there was just all a bunch of stuff in this film. And then the fact that just even to have the story play out. Slow down.
Let's just back up and go through the plot a little bit.
What Mike say? What is his last thing? I gotta hear what he has to say.
Well, okay. I'm just curious, but it's like, because there's more going on than we're expected to see. And like, was an entire plot hatched over the fact that these kids were going to break into the school the night before the show?
It had to have been.
Yeah, all right. So I thought it was going to be something admirable or really interesting, and that didn't
work. No, there wasn't right, enough so, admirable or interesting in this movie. No.
All right, so Eric, let's start going through the plots and discuss things. And
all right.
And, so, and, and the scumbag jocks and the pretentious losers. And, yes. And let's talk about all these.
All the horrible people in this movie.
That's right.
So, all right. So it's 20 years later after somebody died on stage at the high school. They decide, yeah, let's put this play on again. That's a good idea. we have Reese, who is the lead in the play, the male lead in the play. We've got Pfeiffer, who is the female lead in the play. We've got Ryan, who is a jock asshole. And apparently there's some – the reason this is all happening is because there's some requirement at this school that the athletes take part in some culture class or whatever. So they're all involved with the play because they have to be. So he's running around with a camcorder making fun of the people who actually enjoy theater. And then there's Cassidy. Was Cassidy his girlfriend? Was that the deal?
I guess so.
Cassidy was Ryan's girlfriend, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so then there's Cassidy, blonde bimbo, who's along for the ride. So basically, there are a couple moments in the setup where we realize that, you know, Ryan's an asshole. He doesn't like nerds. There's a whole bunch of nerds involved in plays. Pfeiffer's the biggest nerd of them all. And she's straight out of Glee is what Pfeiffer is. She's way too enthusiastic about the whole thing. And Cassidy's just like, Cassidy really didn't have much of a personality. She was just kind of hanging out. And Reese.
Snotty bitch. That was kind of her personality.
She's a cheerleader. But I would have to agree more with Eric than with Mike and A, which is the character just wasn't developed that well.
Yeah. And then Reese apparently used to be on the football team. But
with Ryan.
Yes, with Ryan, and quit to do the play, which we find out later is a bone of contention at home with his father.
Right, right. And we're assuming his father is one of those jock fathers like, what do you mean you're quitting football? What the hell? But there may be something else.
There may be.
Yes.
So basically, Reese is awful. He's not a good actor. And Ryan, although he is indeed a jock asshole, recognizes the fact that Reese is a horrible actor, and wants to shut the play down so that his buddy won't get embarrassed in front of the entire school. So he hatches a plan with the other three here. They find out about this door that doesn't lock the backstage, which Mike is absolutely right. That's a complete bullshit thing. Would never happen.
I'm dumping on the teacher I hated the most, right on their desk.
So
because you're Ryan.
And then I'm gonna piss on some other the principal's desk too.
Right, right. So they decided to break into the school in the middle of the night and destroy the set of the play so that it can't be put on the next day. Unfortunately, it takes them like half an hour, 45 minutes to set that up. What it just took me 5 minutes to tell you about, and really 5 minutes about all it deserves. So that was a little bit painful getting to that point, in my opinion.
Oh, do you remember the really cheap jump scare they had where they just had a long pause in Ryan's room?
That was weird. Yeah.
It was like a minute or two.
Yeah.
Before he just comes up, just goes with his little hoodie over his face. It was probably a wasted couple of minutes right there.
Right. So. Basically, we end up at the point where these four break into the school in the middle of the night with Ryan and the camcorder, to destroy the set. So they're in there and they're doing their thing and they're taking down the gallows and they hear something and it turns out it's Pfeiffer. She is in the school and they can't figure out why. And Pfeiffer's like, well, I saw your car when I was driving by and stopped to see if you were here.
Sounds suspicious to me.
Yeah. And this whole thing just
well,
goes south
up to that
really
point
quick.
It was just standard horror movie convenience cliche, you know, sort of.
Yeah. That's right. And, oh, I was so devastated too when she appeared because I was hoping we'd never have to see her character again.
You just wanted to continue with your man crush on Ryan.
No, no. At least these characters were more interesting. And Reese was just terrible. What the heck, Mike? They all sucked. All the characters sucked. I just am saying, if I had to choose the best of the worst, I mean, it's like the politicians we're going to vote for president. You have to choose somebody.
No, Ryan. No, here. You know what would have made Ryan a palatable character? Right. Remember when the kid pulls the prank on him to get back at him?
Yes.
If he had laughed with it. Right? If he had rolled with it. It was that, no, man! No, I'm going to get you! He was a whiny bitch.
They all would lose their characters.
Oh, like, I know
I'm
that.
I'm just saying, that was my favorite one of the bunch. I mean...
Yeah, but you don't have to work with assholes like that. And the fact that he's the one that you're stuck with...
That's right, Mike.
...for an hour.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. You're stuck with that for an hour.
I don't know. It's
a point of view character. You can't escape from him.
But that doesn't bother me that much, Mike. Oh, good Lord.
Oh, man. This movie stirred up issues for all of us, man. This is an emotional episode of Dark
Discussions. Ryan stirred us apart.
Mike, next time we have a college or high school four characters in a film like this, let me know, and I'm driving the 3.5 hours, and we're gonna watch it together because I got to see your expression, like if you flipping out at the screen. Like
I wasn't flipping out of the screen. It was just he was an irritating character to have to tolerate for an hour. Usually the character with the camera. Usually in found footage films, the character with the camera is the one who's in the background. He's not the one who's constantly drawing attention to himself.
I got to look at your expression while you watch films like this.
Phil has to taste your tears.
That's awesome, babe. All right, sorry. But you're right, Mike. They're all annoying, crappy characters. But anyway, continue. I apologize.
So Pfeiffer shows up, and then, God, I really don't remember what happens next from there till the end.
Well,
they run around and they die.
Yeah, pretty much. The first thing they find out is that the door that they found out was unlocked, completely open, wide, is now sealed.
That's true. That happens.
Like, it has a complete metlock mechanism and everything back on there, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And also the sets they tore apart were completely rebuilt, with the noose up there, too.
Yes, that's true. That did happen. The set got reconstructed. So they're freaked out about these, and they're pretty much trapped in the high school at this point, and they're running around the high school trying to find a way out, and spooky shit keeps on happening. I don't even remember the order they get picked off in.
It was Ryan, Cassidy, and then Reese.
Yep, okay, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yep.
And basically, whatever is responsible for these ongoings, picks them off one by one in that order.
We do find out immediately that even before the gallows is repaired miraculously, we do find out this is going to be a supernatural film because I still wasn't convinced if it was going to be supernatural or someone 20 years ago coming back to kill her. You know,
yeah, I was on the fence for a little while too.
Yeah, when I found out that it was supernatural was when Ryan broke into the locker of that loser kid, the one that he and him had,
right? You know,
did each other's whatever, they did terrible things to each other. He broke into his locker and he was going to do something to the locker, and when he was doing that, the locker above him opens and closes,
right?
And mm-hmm. So that's how we know that, okay, there's some supernatural entity or something in the school.
And, yeah. And I gotta say, Phil, I was fully expecting a dump there.
Oh, yeah.
When he
breaks
into his locker, I was waiting for him to dump on his shirt.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I would have. If you have one dump and you only can use one and you're in this school, would you do it to just some dorky kid that bothers you, or would you do it to one of the asshole teachers that ruin your life? Which would you do?
From the way they've shown this character and what little we've seen of the character, the thing that was foremost on his mind was that was the tech nerd, because he made him look like an idiot.
Yeah, all right, that's true. And it seems like he may get along with the teachers, this Ryan guy, because it didn't seem like he had any issues with any of the teachers or administrators. He even was friendly to the coach of the cheerleading team. So you're right. So if he was going to use a dump, he would probably do it on some kid that he was pissed at.
Dump? You're making it sound like a power-up in a video game.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. Excellent. All right. So, you're right, though, Mike. That would have been an excellent opportunity to use his one dump power-up. And then we would have saw you cry and we could eat your tears. Sorry.
Oh, boy. So, so they start getting picked off. And we come to find out what we already talked about, that in the original production of The Gallows, it was Reese's father who was originally cast in the lead. And Charlie, the student who ended up dying, was actually going to play the part of the hangman. But he was also the understudy, and ended up playing the lead since Reese's father called off sick. And so that's why he was up there in the rope when it malfunctioned and he ended up dying.
We did forget one interesting item, Eric, assuming you want to call anything in this film interesting. they had the not auditions, but I guess what do you call those things when you practice?
Rehearsal.
Rehearsal. Thank you. And
parents, Phil, if you're going to pick on the nerds, at least know the terminology.
Fair enough, but it depends on your definition of a nerd. So they are doing rehearsals, and Ryan's photographing it, and we see how bad Reese is as an actor, as you mentioned, Eric. And then they pan to the audience, and there's a lot of mothers and fathers there watching their children rehearse.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then, but there's one woman that's always sitting at the same spot and whatever, and doesn't appear to know anybody in the production. So Ryan goes over and talks to her, and we discover that she was in the play back in the day.
No. She was Charlie's girlfriend.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, the funny thing is they said Charlie had a girlfriend, but it's like they don't know who she is.
Right.
At that point, I'm like thinking, gee, I wonder who Charlie's girlfriend is.
Yeah, this is true. So basically, we were introduced to her as someone that was part of the production 20 years ago. And then later in the movie, we're introduced where we find out further information, which is that she was the girlfriend. And I forget how we did find that out, Abe. How did we find that out? Do you remember?
Let's see. At the end of the film, after Reese eats it, we see I guess her name's Alexis Ross, in the background clapping as both Pfeiffer and the spirit of Charlie take a bow, which alludes to the fact that both Alexis and Pfeiffer had set this whole thing up in order for Charlie to get his revenge.
But how did we learn that she was Alexa was Charlie's girlfriend?
She says it, doesn't she? When Assface is interviewing her.
No, she never does. Actually,
I thought she had.
No, she just was acting like.
Maybe
like
I just made that assumption because I didn't. They okay. Let's get to the end. Right. horrible things happen. Everybody dies. And basically, we find out at the end of the movie that Pfeiffer actually set this whole thing up on purpose so that Reese could end up performing the final scene of the play and dying just like his father theoretically should have. And the blonde chick is clapping in the audience. And then this is why I thought she was his girlfriend, because there's this scene at the end where they're in a house. And aren't there pictures of the two of them together?
Yes.
Yeah, and this is...
So
this
is it am I making a leap here, or is it my understanding that Pfeiffer was actually Charlie's daughter?
That's what... Yeah, but it's
no.
Weird. No?
It was 20 years.
Yeah, so...
Unless the ghost fucked her mother.
Pfeiffer could be that woman's daughter.
Yeah.
But not with Charlie.
Right.
Okay. Or she could be Charlie's daughter and 20 years old and just faking her identity.
Why would she wait? I don't know.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
So what we're supposed to assume is that within 4 years of these two being involved in the character's death, they both had children that would end anyway.
But, let's assume then that she's not the daughter of Charlie or this woman.
Okay. But she's definitely in on it.
But she's definitely in on it.
For what reasons?
I assume that she was the daughter of the woman. Oh, you do? I just didn't think that she was Charlie's daughter.
Gotcha. I see what you're saying. All right. I didn't figure it out at all. I wasn't sure. I thought she was just in it. I didn't think she was the daughter of either of them, but you could be right. I have no idea.
And
it's not answered.
The thing I actually kind of liked about this movie is that the answer, you know, we're trying to figure out whether it was supernatural or somebody doing it. It actually turns out to be both. It turns out to be real people in cahoots with a ghost. And I thought that was actually kind of clever, but wasted on, unfortunately, on a
right.
not so great movie.
It doesn't really have a payoff.
Yeah. No.
Well, or you could say the payoff is good enough in the sense that it's kind of original, as Eric said, but the hour and a half to get to that payoff
wasn't worth it.
And then they added that crappy tack on ending, which.
But here's the thing. Let me ask if this film. Because the way the reveal happens, right, is that basically she takes a bow with the final death.
Right. She takes a bow with the ghost of Charlie.
Right.
Yeah.
If they excise that completely, if they decided, you know, to change the story so that she wasn't in cahoots with the ghost, would the movie have really changed at all?
Well, again, the thing that is quote unquote cool is what Eric said, which is people and a ghost together are doing it. So that would remove the only cool thing.
What I'm saying is that the story would have not have played out in any differently if she wasn't in cahoots with him.
Oh, right, because she was planning to do it anyway?
No, and in other words, if she was just another kid trapped in the behind the scenes thing with Charlie.
Yeah,
the same as the others. The story wouldn't have played out any different. I don't know that her character would have acted any differently. I don't think that she would have done anything differently.
She set the whole fucking thing up. They wouldn't be producing this play if it weren't for her.
No, but you're not understanding what I'm saying.
Clearly.
Right. In other words, if she was just this stupid teenager who thought it would be cool to set up the play, the events that transpire at night while they're there... No, I don't think anything would have played out differently. If you walked out, you know, as in the last second, I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think it has any change to the plot. She didn't do anything to sabotage what they were doing while they were there.
I see what you're saying. You're saying, even though she set up the whole plot to occur, where they were going to kill Reese and get their revenge on his father by killing the son, I guess.
Right.
That was the only thing that she was needed for, because after they get rid of her, what happens inside the high school would still have transpired the same way. I think that's what
basically.
I understand the point you're making, but here's what I don't know is whether or not the supernatural entry was responsible for everything that happened in the high school. Maybe the blonde woman had some hand in locking the door again or whatever.
You could say that, but you could take the same film, edit it in a different way, and completely remove that subplot, and it wouldn't play out any differently.
Except it would suck even more.
Yeah, it would suck even more. It would be basically the same up until the last couple seconds of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that if it wasn't found footage, maybe they could have given you more clues and hints as to what was going on. Maybe did they summon the ghost? Was the ghost there all along?
It gets really confusing because
I think the ghost was there all along because there are people telling stories about weird things happening in the high school.
Yeah, that's true, because when Ryan was talking to some of those women in the little crowd, they were bringing up such things, actually. But it was really damn good timing for this whole thing to fall into place, though. Like, they just, everything was too perfect for this plan, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, I mean, you really didn't even have to, if this was the plan, you didn't have to do the gallows. It could have been any play. Right? What? I mean,
no. You're missing the ironic revenge aspect.
Well, I understand that there's an ironic revenge, but which is why I'm wondering, I don't know that that was even part of the plan. I think it would have just been to have him die the same way Charlie died. They just were convenient enough to go in the night before.
Oh, okay.
So this is it. I don't know if this was really well thought out and they didn't impart the information effectively to us, or if this was just kind of made up half-assed as they went along and didn't really think anything through. I tend to think it's the second.
Right.
Because this is the worst revenge plot I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Really? It worked. And he's dead.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah,
it was all hinged on the fact those guys would actually show up to try and wreck the play.
If that was the plot. And why would they kill Ryan and whatever her face was first? Who cares? Or the whole point was to kill.
Maybe that wasn't the plan the whole time, and they improvised since the opportunity presented itself. Maybe the original plan was to have him die during the play, just like his father should have.
Yeah, that could be true, and the ghost got her there to fix that issue.
Right.
But Mike, you have a damn good point, because I was actually thinking that at one point in the film, right after I left the film, which is, since they wanted Reese dead, and the ghost did too, couldn't they, just took a gun and blew his brains out, and you know, 2 days earlier? I mean, why did it have to be so intricately done, especially at midnight?
Well, and again, if he's the target, why wasn't he the only one killed? And if this is some homicidal ghost on a rampage, shouldn't we've had a whole bunch of deaths in the intervening 20 years?
No, well, you're right. A lot of slasher films, a lot of supernatural monster films like that. It's like, why are these peripheral characters being killed when the slasher really just wants to kill that one character? And so you're absolutely right. However, that's a weakness in a lot of films, especially a lot of the slasher films from the 80s. But
those are physical beings. They kill the ones who come across in their way.
Well, speaking of that, actually, the ghost's influence goes beyond the school, because keep in mind, it actually talked to police inside the house as well.
That's true.
Yeah. So just how far can this thing go, you know?
And it has the ability somehow to play VCRs that aren't plugged in with no videotape and access 20-year-old news archive footage, and I don't know.
We've seen that type of crap in a lot of supernatural films.
Yeah, ghosts have the ability to do everything now.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. But I do think that if they really wanted to kill this Reese guy, they should have just brought him into the backwoods and hit him over the head with a baseball bat.
I want to go after his dad.
And then be done with it
instead of having it this
ironic revenge.
Yeah,
ironic revenge.
Well, that's the thing. It's very intricate and ironic, I guess.
Why didn't they go after the dad, I'm asking? Like, the dad's alive. He's still in the town. Why not try to get him?
Actually, you know what? That's a damn good point.
Yeah, and let me throw one more. Well, first of all, wouldn't you go after the prop guy?
That's who he. You're absolutely right, because the dad.
Yeah, the guy see the fucking gallows.
Yeah, because the dad just got sick and couldn't do it.
And the dad would have died otherwise.
Yeah. So it's the prop's fault. It's the school's fault. It's who the town.
Well, that's what happened.
I'm sure they did.
Fully functional gallows. You don't mention all that for a fucking school play.
Oh God. You know. So yeah, there's that. Oh God! It makes my head hurt so bad.
You know what? This might be a short episode of Dark Discussions, because I can't really think of much more to say about this movie.
I don't either, honestly.
Oh,
anyone?
Well, yeah, anyone?
I will say, look, there were some moments. First of all, I think Quentin Tarantino would love this film because there are so many shots of feet. I have never seen so much footage. You know, in found footage.
You're wrong, Mike, because they have to be woman's feet, painted toes, and
I know.
So it's a little different.
Why do you know that?
Why I know that because I read the same articles that Mike did about Quentin Tarantino.
I don't know. You just have to watch his movies. He's got bare women's feet, mostly Uma Thurman's feet, in as many of them as possible. But why, you know, one of the conceits with found footage, and I'm willing to count found footage a break in a lot of cases, when people say, well, where would they keep filming? Wouldn't they stop filming at this point? And some of them go out of their way, you know, to explain it. GoPro helps because now you just mount the camera on somebody's head. They don't have to drop the camera. But why the hell would you be videotaping yourself going into the school to vandalize the school, coming up with the plot to vandalize the play?
That is stupid. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, all of this. So like, oh, I'm going to do all this incriminating evidence, and oh, look how smart and funny I am. Who are you showing this to, you dumbass?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. My high school, in every high school, there's a lot of assholes and a lot of scumbags. And when someone wrote graffiti on the side of the building, and for like 2 weeks they were trying to get people to say who it was, and the thing is the two people that did it told other people they did it, and you know, went around and around, so people knew exactly who did it, but
nobody likes a rat,
but no one can prove it's them because it was, first of all, that's the thing. It's like
snitches get stitches.
They bring the kids in to the police department. They bring the kids in to the principal's office, whatever, question them. They deny it continuously. There's no camera work because back in those days, they didn't have the cameras like they do nowadays. So everybody knows they did it, but they can't do anything about it. And so
that schools have a lot of leeway. They don't need benefit of the doubt.
Well, maybe nowadays, but back in the day, they couldn't. However, here, they are actually doing what you said, Mike, which is not just telling someone, we vandalized the play. They are filming the entire thing, so even if they got away with it, you know, someone's going to find out about it. And they're going to have all the footage. And they're going to go to juvenile prison.
And get ass raped.
we can only hope.
That'll be the gallows too.
By Kevin Bacon from what was that movie that he was the bad
Hollow Man?
No. He was the cop. He played a cop. A prison guard for kids. Sleepers. You ever see that movie?
Sleepers. I did. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a really good movie, and he basically physically abused those people along. With like three other guards, and there's a big story about getting revenge and all that.
Okay.
Yes, Jason Patrick plays the young kid as an adult and stuff. So it's a pretty good film.
Don't think I've seen that actually.
Oh really? Yeah. Sleepers, good film.
Ring a bell.
So that's a good point, Mike. First of all, you said two things: high school and kids. Isn't that synonymous with stupid?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there is stupid. I get that, but it just seems even more stupid.
Stupider.
You know, he doesn't even address it in some way. Nobody else says it to him either.
That's true. And you think Reese, who seemed, even though he was being a follower to Ryan, he seemed level-headed enough to say, dude, we probably shouldn't be recording any of this. And yet... Yeah, he didn't even say
it. And he never said it. If someone had said it, he said, no, man, we'll have it for memories for later on. Nobody else will ever see it.
Then
I would say, okay, fine. He's stupid, but he's a teenager, and teenagers do stupid shit that make no sense whatsoever. So I wouldn't have a problem with that. But the idea that nobody else calls him out on it, even Pfeiffer, when she comes in, says, why the hell are you recording just walking around the school in the middle of the night?
Now, Eric, you're the one that notices these things, and then it takes you out of the film. Did this one come across to you? Because I was thinking that too, Mike.
I mean, for the most part, the whole thing was kind of stupid. I was never really into it all that much throughout the whole film. So yeah. I guess the answer is yes, but.
And there were occasionally, I will say there were things that I liked, like when Ryan broke his leg. and it's not because it was Ryan, but like when they have him being dragged off, with they had the shot of the twisted leg.
Yeah, yeah.
That made me cringe a bit. When, what's her name, Cassie gets killed.
Yeah.
You know, they have that, there was that neat moment where she's just talking to the camera and the hangman slowly.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was good.
Comes
yeah,
into the camera. Cool. And there is no loud piano drop to make you go, ah! It was just a creepy moment instead of a jump scare. But I was so, like Eric, I was so detached from the film. They didn't have the effect that they probably should have had. But I could appreciate it as an effect.
Right.
Well, and I do agree that the ghost was a little all-powerful. It was able to do way too much. Like when they're up in the rafters and whatnot, crawling around on the walkway and pictures appear and ropes, and it's like, what the fuck? What is this? Is crazy.
There seemed no limit to what it could do.
Yeah.
Well, and Mike, you had some good points. Like, for example, when Ryan died, the sandbag or whatever falls to the ground and he gets pulled up, and we see him getting straight up shot. That was kind of cool. And then Cassidy, like you said, where the hangman's walking. But Reese's death, even though it was a payoff and it was, it had to be done for the ending that we got, that kind of pissed me off. It's like, well, he didn't deserve to die. He wasn't a scumbag. He wasn't, and he, if anything, he was saying, we're going to get you out of here, Reese. I swear I'm going to help you with all this. And maybe he's doing a knight of, prince in knight's armor, whatever the hell the term is, because he wants to get laid by
knight in shining armor.
Yeah, that's it.
There.
Thank you. The thing is when he died, it was like, oh, that's kind of sucks. That's how I felt anyway. While
and he was the one. I mean, he was, I think, the most likable character. But even so, his motivation for destroying the sets seems a little thin.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, because he could have just done it what his father did and came out down with the stomach flu for the day.
Well, let's keep in mind, this is all Ryan's idea. He just went along for a ride.
Right, and it was definitely like adolescent peer pressure and pushing him into doing something stupid.
Well, and you know what else it was hormones, because Ryan kept on saying, dude, if you fuck up and screw up this play because you're a terrible actor, Reese is never going to go out with you. And suddenly he's going, oh my God, you're right. What do I do? Yeah, that's not good. And
he wasn't thinking of his head. He was thinking of his second head.
That's right.
Right. And see, and then again, that's something else with Ryan. Is like, he's even bitching over his best friends. It's his hypothetical friends. There's just nothing to like about him.
Mike is glad that he got hung.
Oh, no, I'll give Mike one thing. These characters all dying, except maybe Reese, because he wasn't really that bad of a guy. But these characters dying was basically the Evil Dead remake characters. It's like, who fucking cares? Get them off
right.
the screen,
right?
You know? Yeah,
pretty and hard. Again, just a little tweak. Make him that jock asshole, right? I know I've had a lot of them in my class, but there are also times when you get them alone, when you know that there's more to them than that. Right, there had to be something. He couldn't have done anything decent during the film to make you have some sympathy for the character.
Yeah, well, you know what? Yeah, that's a good point, Mike, because they do. And Abe, I think you brought it up mostly, which is these characters, they were caricatures. In other words, they were the archetype characters you would see in these type of films. So the cheerleader bitch, the jock scumbag, the pretentious ass play leader, and then Reese, who's the thinking with his second head.
Well, to be honest, I didn't think Cassidy was that much of a bitch.
Yeah, I agree.
If they were gonna make her cheerleader bitch, they should have gone for it, but they didn't. She was just kind of there,
whiny, annoying.
She, you know what, though? She, no purpose.
You know what? She only became whiny and all that when they fucked up the whole thing and they got locked in, and then she started blaming her friends, which was fine. But
honestly, she had a point.
That's right. Absolutely. Because the beginning, you're right, she was just following along and, hey, don't leave me out and whatever. So she wasn't really that much of an asshole. And when she was an asshole, it was because she was yelling at the other assholes because they're stupid and dumbasses.
And got them locked in high school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're right. I could forgive her and actually say that she wasn't that bad either. Even though she was dating Ryan, so that's suspect, right, Eric?
You're right. That is suspect. Yep.
Yeah. Yes. So maybe there is something wrong there.
You know, right. This is a film that I've said, you know, that support horror films. Yeah, I know it's another found footage film. Maybe it's not the greatest film, but at least if you support horror films in the theater, maybe we'll get more horror films in the theater. And this is sort of the film that makes me just want to draw the line and just go, nope, don't support this one.
Well, you know what? I mean, I have no issues with people supporting films, and even this film for that matter, and especially because they're at the theater. But I think the issue really is not even the point you just made, Mike, but the real issue is when we support the films that shouldn't probably be at the theaters, like, in my opinion, Oculus, you could argue, From Above, So Below, Ouija, this film, you know, a bunch of films, all of them were just mediocre, in my opinion, or worse. And if we keep on supporting those type of films that make the theaters, then films like It Follows are going to be not, you know, never make the theaters at all, which It Follows almost didn't. So, so if we stop supporting the mediocre films that Hollywood's putting at theaters, maybe they'll switch to different horror films. Or are we threatening, are we going to instead cause a backlash where Hollywood says, you know what? Horror films don't make any money, so let's not release any at the theaters.
Well, I think that's not true, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah, because it made money, but this just feels, this is like the laziest cash in, you know, and this has been the story with horror. I mean, think about the 80s. How many bad slasher films did you get cashing in on Halloween and Friday the 13th? You know, we tend to remember the better ones. Some people, because of nostalgia, remember some of the better ones as being, some of the worst ones as being better ones. But, you know, there's always this cheap cash in, but at some point, you know, fatigue sets in. And, you know, we had one of our listeners write into us recently and say that we need to, you know, that we're too nice to the movies.
Here you go.
But bring down the hammer.
You know what? Me and Eric specifically have stated this numerous times, which is we aren't really nice to movies. What we are is when we see a bad movie, we say, you know what? Let's not do an episode on a bad movie.
Well, there's that, but it's also, you know, I don't go into a movie expecting to not like it.
Yep.
I'm hoping to enjoy it. I try to find something. I'm spending whatever it is now, $10 for a movie ticket. I'm hoping to find something to enjoy while I'm watching it. And I can appreciate certain things in a film. And I will say this is not to me as bad as Pyramid was or as bad as The Boy Next Door.
Really that bad?
Yeah, Pyramid's not too good, and I heard terrible things about. Well, I heard Boy Next Door, you get to see Jennifer Lopez maybe nude though.
That's all it takes for Phil.
I'm trying to find a positive, Mike, because I know the movie's terrible. So yeah, the Pyramid and A Boy Next Door are pretty bad, worse than this film. But go on, Mike, your point.
But this still is this is a bad film, and it hits, at least, like, I look at the Pyramid, it was trying something different. You know, and this is, well, I guess you get the reveal at the end, which reveals that they were doing something different all along, you just didn't know it, but you dislike the film so much that you don't really give a shit anymore.
Right. You know?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, Mike, because if I can interject, what I think happened was is that these guys, the directors, because there's two of them, they also wrote the film, came up with this idea that, with this cool twist at the end and brought it to somebody, and they said, yeah, this is good. And then when they made the film, it just got stuck into the same trappings as a lot of a slasher or supernatural horror films. And then when the quote-unquote big reveal happens, which Eric thought was kind of cool, it's like you said, Mike, which is by then it's like, I don't care because I hated the first hour and 15 minutes of the film.
Right. It's too little too late.
And I think that's probably what happened to other films like The Pyramid or other films that have been released that had a kind of cool idea that kind of fallen to the point of like, ugh, why did I see that film? And And I think that's probably, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Everything looks good when it's an idea, and everything can look even better or as good when it's on paper. And then when you bring it to the theater, it's like, ugh. What happened here?
Gotta tell you guys, I was sorely tempted tonight as a prank to just completely fuck with you and act like I love this movie. I almost did it.
Oh, I'm sorry you didn't, really.
God. And it's just to me, we're cashing in, we're trying another Blumhouse film, try to get another Insidious, try to get another Paranormal Activity, a no budget, no frills film that audiences will go nuts over. And they didn't get it, but they got it enough that it made its money back, so they won't learn their lesson yet. And, you know, I certainly gave them my money.
Well, it's similar to the film Devil Inside, which had, as we all know, had a damn good trailer. And then when everybody saw it, they were somewhat disappointed. And
somewhat?
Well,
I would say outraged was the general reaction.
What do you mean I have to go to a fucking internet? Jesus. But what happened was that film still pulled in like $30 million in a week and a half. And this film cost only $100,000 and still pulled in $14.5 million in a week. So, yeah, I mean, as long as they can make movies for nothing and still pull in like... This film will probably be over $25 million by the time it's run, never mind when it goes to Netflix and they make more money that way and all that. So, yeah, I think you're right, Mike. I think Blumhouse, whatever they call it, are going to continue pumping out films, quote-unquote cash-in films, I guess, and hope that they hit once and get another Paranormal or Insidious. And if they don't, at least they still pull in $15 million on the first weekend for a film they made $100,000 to make.
Well, and that's really why that's the formula. Horror movies are inexpensive to make and generally do well. And that is why they keep on getting made, honestly. Studios wouldn't make them if they didn't make money. But as Mike was saying, it happens a lot. So is it worth the 20 found footage films we have to sit through to get to the exists? You know, because
end up in theaters.
You just don't know when you're going to hit the good one, and that sucks.
Well, part of the problem is that the gatekeepers, right, should be the studios and the theater distributors, and they don't seem to have their eye on the ball in terms of what gets into theaters. Like, why didn't Exist get into theaters? Well, because it wasn't about a ghost or a possession film.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Bigfoot movie. And nobody's made a big successful Bigfoot movie hit theaters yet. Mm-hmm. Of course, they would never get a chance to.
Right.
You have to go back to Harry and the Hendersons. You know, it's so Exist gets straight to video.
Well, let me ask you guys this, since we're out of things to actually discuss about the movie. We're talking here about movies making it to the theater. It seems as though the way things are progressing, that's becoming less and less important as time goes by. I know that's disappointing to Mike because Mike likes to go to the theater to see movies. Well, what does everybody think about this trend about it used to be that straight to video was a bad thing and it just meant you had a bad movie. But these days that's not always the case. It can be just a legitimate marketing decision. And how do each of you feel about that?
Well, I believe it has to be a marketing decision because the last, 3 years that we've done our top 10 list, maybe all 5 years that we've done our top 10 list, most of the films that we're picking are films that were straight to VOD. I mean, It Follows, for example, almost went to straight to VOD this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone smarted up and said, oh, we can make at least some money off this, even if it is an art house type film. And that's going to be probably my best film of the year, at least for horror. Last year, Cheap Thrills and Found and Exists and foreign films like Dead Snow 2 and whatever were all on our top 10 lists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Come back to me. All these are straight to VOD films, and yet they're the best horror films. And again, it has to be something to do with marketing. It has to be. I mean,
but I guess the part we don't know is whether or not it's more profitable. Because even they cook the books anyway when they're talking about budgets on movies, because they overinflate their budget so they can write it off. So it's hard to tell what movie's actually making how much money, and they don't even publish it for VOD like they do with the theater box office. So I guess the thing we don't know is whether these movies that they're making the decision to take straight VOD are actually being just as profitable as the one who's going to the theater.
Well, I
maybe
think
not as profitable, but you know, there's always a chance of finding that little niche in a certain type of audience, you know?
Yeah.
I think when a movie like The Gallows costs 48 cents to make, you know, we know they're making their money back on some level. They may not be making gobs of it, but they're rolling the dice knowing, you know, that if they just, you know, scatter their seeds to the wind, that something will land on fertile soil somewhere, that they will get a Conjuring, or they will get a Paranormal Activity, or they'll get something that hooks in with audiences, mm-hmm. and will pull them in $100 million. Yeah. And for that, they're able to make, you know, you make 10 movies on $10 million, right? Mm-hmm. You know, $1 million a piece. And all you need is one of them to hit it, and the rest of them, they'll still make their money back anyway.
Yeah, it's right. A bit of a gamble there.
Because between Redbox and Netflix and everything else, you'll get something out of it. The filmmakers may not get something out of it. They may not see much money. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly enough to keep it going and certainly enough to get you the attention. I think the sad thing is that they're just picking – they're not good at picking films, or at least I don't think they are, because there are a lot of films that are being underseen. And you know, you mentioned It Follows, but you know, Babadook had just as much acclaim for it 6 months earlier, and that didn't get a theatrical run.
Well, that's a foreign film, and as we know, the only foreign films that ever make it to the States,
it was Australian. They were still speaking English.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's usually British films from the UK or Canadian films, and for whatever reason, Australia or New Zealand get fucked, as well as every foreign language film.
No, but here's the point I want to make here before you continue with the foreign discussion, is that unless you've been reading information that I am unaware of, there's no published information on how many people are watching these movies VOD or how much money they're making. So when you say they're being underseen, do we actually know that? Or are we just guessing because it's VOD?
Yeah, that might be a fair point. It certainly you don't get discussion and buzz going on about it. And I think that's part of it, is I think if people really were – like you look at something like –
Come back to me.
Well, I was going to say, like, if you look at things like Netflix has, say, House of Cards, we don't get ratings for it,
mm-hmm.
but people were talking about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right, I don't hear people talking about Come Back to Me. I didn't hear people talking about Exists outside of the niche horror podcasts. I don't hear – you know –
Okay, I see your point.
Right, I didn't hear like students talking about, "Oh, you got to check this movie out. I saw it; it was awesome. It was scary."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mention one of these films. You know, you just don't get the oxygen. The theater gives them the exposure, and I still think that, for especially like horror films, you know, but a lot of these movies play well in a theater with an audience, and I think they just tend to be more enjoyable. Unless it's like when I went to see. What was it, Unfriended, where I think I was literally the only person in the theater, where then it's just more sad and lonely.
Oh yeah, that's better than my experience, which is somebody brought a baby into my showing of Unfriended.
Yeah, and that's another issue. But like, it would have been awesome to see What We Do in the Shadows, like in a packed house.
Yeah, that would have been
fun. The first time, because comedies, people laughing around you makes you laugh more.
But,
yeah.
but that's a New Zealand film. They get screwed. You know that?
Yeah, well, that's their fault for living in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's true. They do have a Xena there. I agree to Mike that you said something that was interesting out of all that you mentioned, which is they're going to make their money back, even probably VOD, but. Yeah, the people that actually made the film probably make nothing, because what they do is they sell the rights for 10 grand or 5 grand or whatever. And then the producer owns the film, and then they make all the money. But at least you know, maybe the director or the screenwriter will now have that on their resume, at least, to say, look, I did come back to me, or I did exist, or I did found, or I did whatever. I mean, exist was done by the guy from Blair Witch, so that may be a different example. But you know, It Follows or Babadook or any of these other films, Cheap Thrills or whatever, those people now may be able to get a better gig. You know, I'm assuming the guy for It Follows, for sure, he's going to get a big gig sooner enough. But who knows? I mean, it is weird. I don't know what they determine makes a horror film worthy of theaters, except that maybe it is the 18 to 28 crowd or something. That's all I can think of.
Well, but even with horror films, there's something about horror films, and maybe I'm overstating it, but they seem to grab the public zeitgeist in a way a lot of other genres don't when they hit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
which is why you'll get characters, whether it's, you know, Lugosi's Dracula, or Freddy Krueger, or Ghostface, or, you know, Annabelle, you know, that somehow stick in the public consciousness and really grab hold. And people like ghost stories, right? They like scary stories. And we tend to gravitate to them. But, you know, we don't need to always go teenagers. You look at a lot of the best horror films have had adult stars focused on families. You look at Paranormal Activity. It wasn't about a bunch of teenagers. The Conjuring, Sinister. You know, it wasn't just teenagers being chased around by a maniac with a knife. You know, there is stuff out there. You can tell stories with adults in it. It doesn't have to be teenagers.
Well, this
is why I'm hoping.
Mike, if I can interject, that's why one thing I read about, you know, a lot of reviews about the film we did last week, We Are Still Here, it was refreshing, a lot of critics said, of a film with all the main characters as middle age instead of teenagers.
Right. I feel like where I am with horror is where I was with comic book movies 30 years ago, where, you know, because I'm a fan of the comic books, and there were so few comic book films. Every one that came out, I kind of hoped didn't suck. And then you get something like Dread or Barbed Wire or Steel. That was awful.
Barbed Wire was a
mess. Oh, Steel.
And you just hope, because, you know, people just would dismiss it then as, you know. And now I'm at the point where I'm rooting for Crimson Peak to do well, even though I haven't seen the film yet. I want it to be a good movie, and I want it to be a success, because I want, you know, someone to remind Hollywood that you can have a big, quote-unquote, big budget, at least for a horror film, big budget film come out and be successful, that they don't all have to be, you know, these cheap fly-by-night B-list actor productions that were filmed in somebody's backyard.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
You know, I'd like to be able to go back to where you had movies like The Thing and Poltergeist in theaters.
Yeah, well, no, that's true.
I don't think they're not willing to do that. It's just, like you said, the ones making it to the theaters aren't necessarily that good. However, I don't remember all of the movies that made it to the theaters in the 80s. I'm sure all of those weren't good either.
Well, that's what
there were a lot
of
crap ones.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. For every Poltergeist or The Thing that made theaters, I'm sure there was dozens of these third-rate slashers or whatever that made it as well.
But I'd be willing to bet the Poltergeist remake,
no, it's terrible,
unfortunately, had a much lower budget than what the original Poltergeist had. It didn't seem to get nearly the amount of promotion that something like that might have gotten.
And that's fine.
Yeah, but it's, you know, and you're right. So in the 80s, you had all this low-budget horror stuff coming out, and it was there, but you still had a couple of big tentpole releases every year. And I can't remember really having a big, heavily promoted horror film, especially not one that wasn't a remake.
The Conjuring?
Or a sequel in a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
Those two hit pretty big.
Insidious.
What was the other one?
Insidious, Sinister.
Insidious and Sinister, I don't know that they weren't listed or being pushed as A-list movies. They ended up catching on and being successful.
Because they had a lot of marketing behind them.
All right.
They had pretty good actors in it, too. They weren't like, you know, no-name actors. Ethan Hawke and Patrick Wilson and stuff. So.
Yeah, before. But since then, what, The Conjuring? But it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, last year was kind of weak.
As opposed to getting a, you know, you're not even getting like two or three a year. You're getting maybe one a year.
Yeah, last year
these are mid-budget films.
Last year, the biggest horror film releases were at theaters was, I think, Oculus and what the hell's that? The
Quiet Ones?
Annabelle. Right? Annabelle, Oculus, and From Above, So Below.
Annabelle was awful, but I didn't have a problem with Oculus. I don't know why you hate that movie so much, Phil.
So I got to rewatch it, but that whole last 20 minutes was like, what the fuck? But
that was the idea.
I remember having quite a laugh of So As Above, So Below. That was pretty terrible.
Yeah, that one was a little messy.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was actually the best-selling, what did you say, something like best-selling horror Blu-ray last year or DVD last year, really? Or something like that.
Which, huh. Oculus or As Above, So Below?
Really?
Or most watched on VOD, something like that. It had something noteworthy for last year.
Yeah.
Well, it did take place in Paris, which is a great city. I'll tell you that. Well, it is.
And we're back to square one.
It is a great city. Paris is a great city. I don't know. It'll be curious to see what is going to be released later in the year. I know, obviously, Del Toro's horror film's coming out, and I know Eli Roth's horror film's coming out. But again, these are all cult directors that people like because of who they are. So I would like to see, you know, films come out of nowhere that make it to the theaters, and I don't know if we're ever going to see that this year.
We already did
with It Follows.
That one, I don't count.
I don't know if you've heard about it.
I don't count It Follows because it wasn't supposed to. What happened was they put it in the theaters for one day.
I would count that as out of nowhere.
Well, I'm talking about a big film that hits the imagination both critically and financially at the theaters. But I don't know. But then again, maybe we've never had that, right? Because, I mean, even the big horror films that were great in the past were done by fairly big directors.
Well, it depends. I mean,
not
some of them
were big at the time, but...
Yeah, that's true, Eric. That's true. Some of them may have been the film
I honestly can't remember. What's his name? Seven.
David Fincher? No, he wasn't. He was Alien 3.
Okay, so he was not big when he did Seven.
No, he wasn't big. John Carpenter wasn't big when he did Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of them. These are things that made their names, and then they moved on. How big was Landis when he did American Werewolf in London? What had he done before?
Yeah, I don't know what he's done. That's a good question. I mean, obviously, what's his face? The guy that did Nightmare on Elm Street. He had done some cult films before that, and then Nightmare like was the one that I guess made him become a household name.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but you're right. It Follows you could argue is one of those type of films. Even though it didn't pull in like 100 million. But then again, I don't think any of those other films did either, did they? Well, Halloween did. Yeah, Halloween was like one of those highest grossing film ever per dollar paid to make it or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends. And Landis, I'm an idiot, had done Animal House and Blues Brothers. So, yeah, he had already had something. Duh.
Just not in the genre.
Yeah, just not in the genre, which is where my brain was focused. I don't know. Certainly something like Silence of the Lambs was a big studio film critics and audience loved. But that was not a big budget production film. Scream kind of came out of nowhere, although obviously Wes Craven was a known quantity by that point.
That's right. Yeah.
Holy shit, Phil, you ain't kidding. Halloween only cost $300,000 to make and grossed $47 million.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
In 1979 dollars.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm surprised it even cost $300,000, to be honest. Yeah.
So anyway, so this says something. When your movie is so bad that you start doubting the entire state of the genre in the industry.
You know what, though? As we said in our 2014 recap episode, it doesn't really bother me that much. I mean, it's disheartening because you would like to see it at the theaters. But we still, for example, last year had a lot of damn good films that were all straight to VOD.
Well, there are, and someone, I think it was Dustin Hoffman, recently was in an interview, was lamenting the state of film. And he talked about how, you know, making The Graduate, and how you would never get that film made today, and how they took 3 years polishing that script, and making sure it was all just right. And how he, and I think he was absolutely correct, except his target was off. The problem wasn't film. The problem was Hollywood. Hollywood would never make The Graduate today. Hollywood has to have a release date before you even have the script finished.
And
Hollywood is all about the big budget blockbusters. The independent cinema, quote unquote independent, even if there are the art house divisions of main studios.
Exactly.
You're getting a tremendous amount of stuff out there, and technology allows anybody to be a filmmaker, and you are getting some really awesome films being released.
In all genres.
And in all genres. Except comedies. There really aren't enough good comedies out there. And it's just that you have to go find them. They're not coming out of Hollywood as much. So film is fine. Cinema is fine, sort of.
Hollywood sucks.
It's the Hollywood system that is really broken, because it's stuck in the blockbuster mentality. And I say this as somebody who loves good blockbusters. The problem is there's too many shitty blockbusters.
And Mike, you have a good point, which is it's the problem is to try to find them. And that's the key. If they don't get a theatrical release, they get no press, like you said. And then that's, you have to really search, or and it's a pain in the ass sometimes, you know. But at least that's what one reason why we do this podcast, is bring some of these films to people's attentions, even though we do blockbusters and we do cult favorites like It Follows and things like Babadook and whatever. We also try to bring films like Come Back to Me and Found and Cheap Thrills that no one probably even heard of.
And because there is something awesome about uncovering a film that you hadn't heard of, like Come Back to Me.
Right.
Right, or... And I know not everybody's necessarily thrilled with that movie, but I think everybody here really liked it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's still my favorite part of doing this podcast, is that when we do hit the direct-to-VOD low-budget thing... and let people know about it, like Resolution, or Come Back to Me, and get the word out so a few more people see it than would have afterward, you know, that makes this whole thing worthwhile for me personally.
Yeah. I mean, and I, you know, even in a couple others, like this year was, Zombievers and, Predestination.
Yeah.
But even lesser cult type films like Ex Machina, or I guess even It Follows, that weren't seen by many people at theaters anyway. At least we're promoting those films as well. And I, you know, because like Ex Machina, I don't think people even know that film exists yet. It was at the theaters and it still made like 18 million. And then, you know what it is? It's like Edge of Tomorrow last year, where everybody ignored it. And then when it came on VOD, everybody's watching and go, my God, this is the greatest film ever. And the thing is we had already done our review when it first came out and recommended it. And so maybe some people went and saw it before it, having to wait until VOD or disc or whatever.
Right.
Anyway, all right. So, any further things you guys wanted to bring up about the horror films in general? This film here, The Gallows, or anything else of note?
I think we don't have to go around in a circle. We could just sum it up and say we all thought this movie was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I would agree with that. It's
It wasn't the worst movie ever, but it's not worth paying a ticket for.
No, just wait for it to come on DVD or VOD.
Yeah. I mean, if it pops up on Netflix, you know, worth, you know, checking out. But
right.
Yeah. Save your money anyway. And the filmmakers already made their money, so, and many times more. All right. So, Mike, hopefully you'll have fun at what's this convention again?
That Scares the Care.
Yeah. And what do they do? What is this organization do?
Scares the Care is a charitable organization. It's a 501(c). Charity that raises money for mostly children in need. They're also paired up with, they work with Kane Hodder for children who are burn victims or Burn Survivors, I guess is what they would use. And they also have raised money for women with recovering from breast cancer or dealing with breast cancer. And it's a small organization. They can only deal with a couple of people at a time. If you go to their website or their Facebook page, you'll see the actual individuals that they're raising money for to help. And it's, you get a lot of support from the horror community. I know he does, Joe Ripple, who's the founder, does a lot of conventions up and down the East Coast. And so this is a convention. It's down in Williamsburg, Virginia during the, well, by the time people hear this, it will probably be over and done with. But hopefully there'll be a third one next year. Maybe you can make plans for it or see them out, seek them out at any of your local conventions, because there's often representatives to be found.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have a website, too. So
yes, scaresofcare.org or scaresofcareweekend.com.
Yep, exactly. And they're on Facebook, too. So, all right, very good. So, once again, The Gallows probably will be out of theaters shortly, so you probably may not even get the chance to see it, not necessarily because it's a bad film, but just because that's how films are.
Yes, do not feel bad.
All right, fair enough. All right, so, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Gallows tonight. Hopefully we got you in time before you went to the theater. To come back next week, we'll be talking about something else.
You know that we're too damn poor from the gallows pole.